Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Well, greetings, everyone, from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the April 30th, 2011 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida, committed to expanding Florida's aerospace enterprise. Well, welcome aboard, everybody, to another hour of talking about your space program, and boy, what a incredible last 24 hours it's been as we've tried to get Space Shuttle Endeavour off the ground for its final flight to the International Space Station. So let's talk about when the next launch is. That means it's time officially for our weekly look at the launch forecast, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, that's right. Endeavour still sitting on the ground out at Pad 39A at the Kennedy Space Center. A lot of people making it into town only to be, well, turn around, do a U-turn, and head back to Orlando and points north and south. Very sad to hear of a traffic fatality as part of all that activity yesterday. It's been a long time since that's happened. And as we look toward Endeavour launching again, maybe this week, maybe next, let's keep an eye out on the roads as we come in and out of town for that. Busy day yesterday. Didn't happen. The story is basically a technical problem inside Endeavour's rear engine compartment, its aft compartment, and a thermostat maybe. Basically, there are these heaters that that heat lines that contain fluid that help operate the auxiliary power units. The auxiliary power units are these little tiny spheres about the size of a basketball. They spin at great speed to provide mechanical energy, are you following me, that then pressurizes a hydraulic system, which in turn then operates or gives the crew the ability to move the wing flaps and move the space shuttle main engines to swivel them and steer, not only for the climb to space, but even more importantly, during the return to Earth. And so just behind the three space shuttle main engines, the auxiliary power units are the most critical system on board the orbiter, at least in terms of high energy contained in a very tight package. And they need to work. And all of the systems related to the APUs, all the redundancies need to be in full play before they take off. As Mike Leinbach is fond of saying, and quoted again yesterday, is saying he'd rather be on the ground wishing he was flying than flying wishing he was on the ground. And so with kind of that mindset, they stood down. They couldn't get the heater to work. They're hoping it's just a thermostat, just like a thermostat sitting inside your little device in your kitchen wall or wherever it is in your house. It gets to a certain temperature, cold, and then the thermostat kicks in. It's supposed to turn on the heaters. That did not happen. And so they troubleshooted it a little bit as best they could. They threw some switches in the cockpit. That didn't work. The heater wouldn't come on. And now the problem could be a little more extensive. It could be just the thermostat, or it could be the wiring. It could be a control module that feeds electricity into that system. And so the troubleshooting is continuing. Basically, what they had to do then is they shut down the whole countdown yesterday, turned the crew around. They were actually halfway through on their way to the launch pad, which, by the way, let me pause and say, was one of the most remarkable things that I've seen in a long time out at the Cape. You know, I'm following along on NASA TV, and they've got great cameras following the van the whole way. And the van always pulls up right in front of the vehicle assembly building and drops off a couple of crew members, a couple of people that are supporting the launch, not the astronauts themselves, but management and whatnot. And there's always a very large group of people, press people, and in case of yesterday, all the tweeters that were out there, to wave to the crew. It's kind of a traditional thing. You go on stand out and wave to them and wish them well and wish that you don't see them, that they don't come back anytime soon. And in this case, the Astra van pulls up toward the VAB and does this quick left turn into the Launch Control Center parking lot and disappears. And then the shot on NASA TV goes to a picture of the shuttle on the launch pad, and launch commentator George Diller stops talking for a while, and you just know at that point that something's not good, that something different's happened here. And next thing you know, George is announcing the scrub. So it was kind of an interesting little dramatic play out there on television. When you're used to all this ritualistic things that go on before a countdown and before a launch, to see it kind of go off script, you knew right away that something was interesting. Well, in any case, they did scrub the launch, and so now they've drained the external tank of its hydrogen and its oxygen, and it takes basically a full day for that to happen, not only for them to physically drain the tank, but then there's always some residual propellant in there, especially in the case of hydrogen, that has to kind of boil off by itself. It gets to be too much where it's not, too little where it's not going through the pipes. So it boils off, and then they inert the whole thing. They put it in an inert gas into the system. They've completed all that as of just basically late this morning, and now are setting up the scaffolding and the equipment they need to pop open the hatch that allows them to get access to the rear engine compartment of Endeavour. They're going to go in there today and tonight, see if it's the thermostat. If it's the thermostat, it's a quick repair by all accounts, and we could be back in a position where they're going to be able to launch on Monday about 2:33. Roger, 2:33. Yeah, he's done. Yeah. If not, then we'll be day for day after that to see what happens. There's an Atlas launch this Friday scheduled, Atlas 5 at 2:14 in the afternoon. It's a United Launch Alliance mission launching the U.S. military's first space-based infrared system geosynchronous satellite, basically a missile early warning detection satellite, the first of a new generation, a new breed of that kind of spacecraft. And so that's kind of sitting out there on the range. And if Endeavour can get ready to fly and be cleared and get off the ground before they have to stand down and prepare for that launch, for the Atlas launch, then that's kind of everybody's best hope. The best hope being that they launch on Monday and the Atlas flies on Friday. Some of the more worst-case scenarios are that it takes them longer to prepare Endeavour to repair what went wrong, and that then you start backing everything up at that point and launching either later in the week, maybe get one or two attempts before standing down for the Friday launch, or wait for the Atlas launch, wait for the next kind of traffic clearance opportunity up at the International Space Station, and fly then maybe sometime, you know, let's talk about May 9th, May 10th, somewhere in that time frame. So it's all up in the air right now. We expect to know something more by this time tomorrow. NASA kind of tentatively looking at doing a briefing in the morning, but it will ultimately be decided when that briefing will be after they've done the technical troubleshooting. Management has had a chance to get together and put their story together and then get over to the press site and explain it to everyone. And, of course, we'll get all those words out to you in the normal ways that we do that. But we'll keep our fingers crossed for best-case scenario for a launch on Monday. A launch on Monday was 2:33 was it for a Monday launch? That's right. And so it backs up a little bit every day. And in fact, if it had launched today, we would have been doing countdown coverage for you right now. But that's not the case. So anyway, there you go. And in the meantime, none of this influencing yet Atlantis' scheduled launch on June 28th. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for that. So let's hope for Endeavour on Monday, Atlas on Friday, and that'll be the way it turns out. Well, look, let's take our first break. And when we get back, we'll talk past, present, and future space with longtime colleagues Dwayne Day and Roger Guillemette, both here in the studio with me. We'll introduce them shortly. Plus your comments and questions along the way. Space Talk sponsored by Space Florida. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB.
This is Space Talk with Jim Banky.
welcome back to Space Talk, again brought to you by Space Florida. I am Jim Behnke, and I want to make sure that we invite you today. We're going to have a very wide-ranging conversation with our guest today, and between the three of us, I think we can handle just about any space-related question you might have about any aspect of our space program today. Military, commercial, education, space policy, space history. I wouldn't want to start any kind of trivia contest amongst us, but that's also possible today, too. So, you know, give us a call, 321-768-1240. Again, the number always here in the studio. If you're listening to us online at WMMBAM.com, send us some email if you'd like. The address is to AOL. Send it to spacetalking@AOL.com. We'll see that email here in the studio. We'll pull it up for you and answer your questions or comments. What did you think about yesterday coming into the launch? It gets scrubbed. The president's still here. Gets to see some sights. That good news, bad news. Gabby Giffords here, the wife of Mark Kelly, finally made it. The whole setup for a great photo op didn't happen, though, and that's okay. We'll fly space shuttles when they're ready. But what did everyone think about that? Those are all good topics for discussion here as we join in with our guests. And our guest today in the studio here for the launch has some time here to kill, so we thought we'd have him on board with us today. Some good friends, known them all for a long time. Dwayne Day, space historian, policy analyst, currently with the National Academy of Sciences, prolific writer, all-around good guy. Dwayne Day, welcome to Space Talk.
I'm very happy to be here.
Glad to have you here. We've known each other professionally for a long time, but we've never met till today.
Yeah.
The online world's an amazing thing. You get to know someone so well, and I know a lot about what your background is and what your feelings are about stuff, and we enjoy your writing all the time. You know everybody that I know, and I know everybody that you know, it seems, but here was the first time today in the studio that we get a chance to meet, so that's really cool. And the same thing with my good friend Roger Guilmette, who we also met a long time ago when I was with Florida Today, and we were just starting out our whole online adventure. Mark Dakotas, really the pioneer there. I came along with him to put together Space Online. And very early on, Roger, too, was an early adopter of the whole online thing. And we followed our space endeavors, our space adventures together, and has turned into a great friendship and a real brother of mine. Longtime aerospace writer, frequent contributor to news organizations, publications all around the world. Very busy and active here on launch days with space.com. A true expert at a lot of different parts of space, military space. He and Dwayne have worked together on some great features about the history of secret mission patches and not-so-secret mission patches and what they've revealed to us about stuff, a lot of neat things. So anyway, Roger from Rhode Island, welcome, sir. Welcome to have you on board with Space Talk with me. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Wow.
It's afternoon. But
well,
you.
Okay, so you're both here in town. What did you think? Dwayne, start with you. You're here for the launch. It gets scrubbed. The president's here. Another day in the life of the space program, or is this just an awful opportunity that went wasted?
Well, I think it's pretty amazing that we've been launching shuttles for close to 30 years now, right?
Yeah.
And this just shows that it's still not routine. You know, they roll this thing out to the pad, everything's going great, and then at the very last minute, something crops up. And it shows something that we learned with the Columbia accident 8 years ago, which is that this is still a very complex vehicle, and as the Columbia Accident Investigation Board report said, they should treat this as an experimental vehicle. It's not operational. Yeah. You have an airliner, occasionally they break down, but for the most part, your plane is going to be working and ready for you when you check your ticket in at the gate, and 99% of the time it's going to be ready to fly. And the shuttle is not like that. It's this very complex, finicky machine.
Yeah, I remember that when you guys wrote that. Dwayne, you were on the, I don't want to say on the board itself, but I guess you served the board.
I was
the Columbia board,
an investigator.
And when the board came out with this idea that shuttle was still experimental, I thought that was very profound in that I hadn't considered it that way. I knew that it was probably not something you would ever consider operational, but I didn't get the sense that it was like an experimental test flight each time, which is really what it still is. And you go back and you look at the X-15 rocket plane, for example, flew 199 times and was still an X plane, was still a test plane. We're only at 134 flights now, about to launch the 134th flight after 30 years, and it is still by no means operational. And so those lessons learned, you know, people say, why are we still launching them? You know, we still got two to go. What are we learning from this? I think what we're still learning is just what you pointed out. It's experimental. It's test. And everything that goes wrong helps us learn about how to do the next one better, whatever that next vehicle turns out to be.
Yeah, well, when we wrote that report, I think we used that word for a couple of reasons. And the first is it is very much an experimental vehicle. Roger and I were discussing this just the other night that when they roll out a new airliner, the Boeing 787 or something like that, and they have to test it, they fly that thing over 100 times a year. Every couple of days, they're up in the air, they're flying around, they're testing it. And it's only after several years of doing that that it becomes declared, they declare it operational, they certify it and all of that. We're 30 years into the shuttle program. We've flown how many times? 133
now.
Is it exactly 133?
Yeah, this will be 134 in the next one.
And so that's certainly one of the things, is that we haven't flown it enough to actually say that we totally understand this vehicle. And I think the other reason that the CABE report used that language was in some ways to remind NASA that they had to get out of the mindset that they had been in leading up to the accident, which is they were treating it operational, they were treating it routine, and they were not asking questions. They were things were happening, as we said, the machine was talking to them. It was whispering to them, and they were not trying to hear it. They were not digging into it. And so we used that language, and we used a lot of other language to really tell the people who were working on the program, you have to listen to the machine. You have to question things that are going wrong. You have to dig into the anomalies and the things that just don't look quite right. And ask yourself, why is that happening? Not simply categorize that as, not a safety of flight issue or a maintenance issue or something like that. And so, and I think NASA responded very well to that. And we've been successful, we've had a number of successful flights since then. And I think it's a tribute to the agency and to the people who've been working on it, who've been working on the shuttle program, that they now do ask those kinds of questions. They try and dig deep down into what's going on. But it will be an experimental vehicle right up until the last flight.
And I want to ask, I want to follow up with you, Duane, in a little bit about the future of our space program and how it relates to what the CABE reported. But I want to go back really quick, Roger, with you, to talk about the interest in this particular launch. You were out at the press site. You saw the tweeters, 150 naive, wonderfully excited people. Good to see that kind of raw interest in the program. We've got 700,000 people expected for the launch around Brevard County. You've got national news with this great love story of Mark Kelly and Gabby Giffords. You've got the president coming on down. And it seems like it's just everything's wonderful because there's all this interest in the program, which we know is because it's about to go away. How do you sustain this interest in the – what can NASA do to sustain this interest in the program moving forward? Can it?
Frankly, I don't think you can. This launch has a lot of similarities to the 1998 mission with John Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
We live in an excess Hollywood TMZ world, and the great interest in this mission – there would have been an increased level of interest in this mission just because it's the second to the last. I've heard a lot of people. I was traveling, met someone the other day traveling who works for the NASA Goddard Space Center and has worked in space program for 20, 25 years, has never seen a shuttle launch, and decided this was the one he wanted to try to get to see because he's not sure he could make it down for the last one.
Right.
So you create that sense of urgency, but frankly, the level of interest around this flight is all because of the Gabrielle Giffords, Mark Kelly relationship. And it was kind of telling yesterday, if you were watching the post-scrub press conference, I'm going to use the term out-of-town reporters, not basically the NASA or the Space Press Corps, instead of asking technical questions about what's wrong with the vehicle, how long can it take to fix it, what do you think the root cause is was everyone was trying to find that human interest angle. Did Gabrielle Giffords tell an interesting anecdote?
Right.
What did the president do with Gabrielle Giffords?
Right.
And I think it's a wonderful, wonderful synergy there. But I think, unfortunately, the increased level of interest in this flight has to do with that as opposed to the rightful place of being the second to the last shuttle mission.
Right. And there are parts of me that say that's not bad. I'll take the interest any way you can get it. But my thing is can that interest be sustained? Can that interest be turned into something good, which would mean continued support for the program in the future? Look, everybody, let's stand by here now. We're already at the bottom of the hour. We're going to stop here. Pause. Take our five-minute built-in hold. Take this break. Get caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. And then when we return, we will continue our chat in the studio here with our guest, Duane Day, Roger Guilmette. Space Talk brought to you by Space Florida. I'm Jim Behnke. You're listening to WMMB.
If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
That's right. He is all about it, whether you're on orbit or not. As Endeavour remains on the ground at the Kennedy Space Center, we're continuing to keep track of what's going on out there for you. And that is that, of course, the launch scrubbed yesterday. And we'll still watch it and see what happens. Our fingers crossed that we'll be able to lift off on Monday at the earliest, about 2:33 in the afternoon. We'll have plenty of live coverage for you. We'll have to break into Rush. Sorry about that if that happens on Monday, but so be it. And indeed, welcome back today, right now, to our second half of Space Talk here, brought to you by Florida Space Florida, committed to expanding Florida's aerospace enterprise. With me in the studio, a pair of guests, Roger Guilmette and Duane Day, both longtime, longtime space cadets in the finest tradition of the concept, and prolific writers both. And, Duane, you had served as an investigator on the Columbia Accident Investigation Board. We were talking before the break. And one of the things that the CABE came out with that was considered the silver lining in the whole disaster that was Columbia, the whole tragedy, was this idea that it finally set the nation on a course that was supposed to take it beyond low Earth orbit. The vision for space exploration announced in 2004, back to the moon, onto Mars, a vision that many parts of it I personally still believe in, although I've come to find other parts of it more intriguing. But in any case, the whole idea that the CABE said the shuttle, it's done. It's had its time. It's time to get off this vehicle. It's you take risks, you mitigate them, you calculate them, but it's dangerous. Let's get off of it and replace it, seemed to be like the right message at the time. But somewhere in the politics, did it get lost that maybe we should have had a replacement first before we get off the shuttle?
You know, I can tell you, I came on to the CABE. I joined as an investigator in April of 2003. And the accident, of course, happened in early February. And when I first came on, one of my coworkers there told me that at least for the first several weeks after the investigation, that a lot of the people who were doing the investigation, this was an independent investigation, that they were really convinced that the shuttle was too unsafe to fly and that it should never go back into service. And he said that after several weeks of looking at the vehicle and talking to people and really chasing down a lot of different issues, attitudes changed, and they still wanted to get – they needed to get to the bottom of why Columbia happened, you know, why the accident had happened. But they had kind of changed their mind that it wasn't so unsafe that it couldn't ever fly again. But by the time the report was put out, there was a very specific message in that report. And what they said was, if you go through that report again – it's been a long time since I've read it – they did not say retire the shuttle. What they did was they said that – by the time that NASA finished the space station, that they should recertify the shuttle. And they never defined what recertify meant.
It's true.
Now, within the military recertifies aircraft. And my understanding of that is that you design an airplane like an F-18 to have a certain service life. It can fly for, say, 15,000 hours, and that's what it's designed for. And then once you get near that service life, what you can do is you can recertify the aircraft, and the military defines how to do that. They take the airplane apart. They do a full inspection. They decide which parts need to be replaced. And then once they do that, and it's a lot of times it's things like wings. They have to take the wings off, replace the wings because of cracks and stuff like that. And once they do that, they recertify that aircraft to fly, say, an additional 5,000 hours. There was no definition of that for the space shuttle. But CABE said NASA should do this. And you can ask yourself, well, why did they do that? And to be honest, that was really a backdoor way of the board members saying that the shuttle had to be retired.
All right.
And it was a forcing function, because when we looked at the history of the shuttle program, there were so many instances where NASA had been working on a replacement, canceled the replacement because of technical or usually cost and schedule reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as they canceled it, they announced that they were going to keep the shuttle in operation for another 10 years or something like that. Early 2001, 2002, they had a program called Shuttle 2020. They
right.
would fly the shuttle until 2020.
Yep.
But what we found when we dug into that was that those decisions were never really based upon the conditions of the shuttle or the age of the shuttle or how anything was it. You know, it didn't stem from a very careful analysis of what it was going to take to keep these things flying safely until 2020. It was simply a decision that was driven by the budget and the policy and all that. And so we wanted to force the agency to stop doing that and essentially say either you have to retire the shuttle or you have to prove that it's safe to fly it for a certain amount of time and a certain number of flights. And so we that was the extent of the CABE report. They did not really deal with the whole issue of how do you replace it, what do you replace it with, thinking that those were decisions that were best left up to the people at the national level in the White House and Congress and also within the agency to come up with a replacement. And as we've seen, they've all fallen down on the job.
Right.
You know, we're stuck here. Maybe Roger's got some ideas on that.
And Roger, where are we right now? You know, we've got a program that's about to wrap up. We've got uncertainty as to where we're going, and as many different opinions in the space community as there is as to what's next. What is next? What should we be doing?
You know, the current concept of going toward a commercial replacement for you know our crewed exploration of space is okay, but you can't just have two or three contractors out there, each operating independently, each operating with some direction other than the broad guidelines of design a replacement vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of attention's been paid to SpaceX, and I think they've done a pretty remarkable job in a pretty short amount of time in developing the amount of technology. But I was speaking to someone yesterday who is involved in some of these upstart companies. And basically this person said to me, we need two or three viable competitors. We can't just put all our eggs in one basket or ride one horse, because if this is going to work, you are going to need the commercial industry to be put in a position where they're going to compete with each other to see, invest the funds, invest the research, invest the R&D to come out with a viable replacement to the shuttle. And you need more than one player in the field in order to egg the other two or three on in order to develop a replacement.
Well, and you can't put them all in one basket. We did that with Shuttle before Challenger, and it almost wrecked our space program. And so then you did have to diversify. But the commercial folks, you know, I'm a big supporter of SpaceX, and I'm a big supporter of commercial space in general. But I also understand, having that silly little business degree that I have, that someone's got to make some money off this. Someone's got to make some profit, and it can't just be government feeding the commercial folks direct as the only customer, because that's really almost no different than the way it is now, except for you're calling it something different. Now, if that's the way it is and that's the way it's got to be, well, then okay. But there's got to be some other commercial use for carrying people into space. I believe, Dwayne, it's got to be something along the lines of solving some of our problems on Earth in terms of energy and other technological things that maybe we can do in space we can't do here. Maybe you have a different view.
Yeah, I think a lot of that is just baloney. I'm fond of saying that anytime somebody brings up the issue of helium-3 in a discussion about human spaceflight, it's proof that they're not serious. But one of the
one particular guy in Houston that you're probably aiming right at there.
there's a lot of them, and what's really funny to me is how you will find that other countries then kind of repeat some of the same crazy claims that you see in the U.S. You know, the Chinese will start talking about helium-3, and then of course somebody in the United States will mention that, oh, well, the Chinese are going to go for helium-3, which is why we need to go for helium-3. And, of course, we need this to fuel our fusion reactors, which don't exist. And they are just around the corner and have been just around the corner for the last 50 years. So,
but would they be closer to reality if we had more of that stuff to research and if we did that research on the moon as opposed to on the Earth?
No.
All right. Well, I mean,
we've spent quite a bit of money on fusion research over the past 50 years, and it's never gotten anywhere close to being viable.
So we'll see. So we still need a good excuse to go out into space beyond just, you know, it's cool and it's got science return, and maybe we can make some money on it. I mean, I'm still not finding the best reason to go that's going to resonate with them. I mean, it seems like it takes something different for every different person, and
we gotta find space aliens.
Yeah, well, or an asteroid aimed at downtown Manhattan in 2 years. We'll see, what maybe that would work too. Well, anyway, let's take our final break. Back more with Dwayne Day and Roger Guilmette and me in a moment. Plus, we'll hear from Patrick McCarthy at Space Florida with his weekly update. Stay tuned. Now, I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
Well, welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, sponsored by Space Florida. Space Talk also brought to you today by the folks at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, who invites you to pick up some tickets for a pair of special events coming up this week, in fact. This Thursday is the 50th anniversary celebration of America's first astronaut to fly in space, Alan Shepard. There's going to be a big ceremony out at its launch pad, which you can get to with an admission ticket to the visitor complex. And then on Saturday, the annual U.S. Astronaut Hall of Fame induction ceremony is going to take place. This year, honoring veteran shuttle astronauts Carl Bobko and Susan Helms. Again, tickets to the visitor complex gets you into that ceremony at no additional charge. All the details are online at thekennedyspacecenter.com. And now we're going to pause for a moment and go be joined by our good friend Pat McCarthy, who joins us by phone with his weekly update from Space Florida. Pat, of course, Director of Spaceport Operations. Pat, welcome aboard for another report, sir.
Thank you, Jim. Good to talk to you as always.
Well, so what's going on here? You have some developments. Did you have some developments in Tallahassee this week? Or
we did. They're entering their final week of the legislature for this year, and I got some good news that the Space Florida budget looks to be finalized at just a little bit over $10 million, which was what the governor had requested. About two-thirds of that is for things like business development and workforce support, and the other third is for our operations, you know, basically salaries and the day-to-day operations of the organization. So that's good news.
That sustains Space Florida basically the same level as this year?
Basically is. Yes, it is. And we've got some other proviso language in one of the, I think it's the Florida Department of Transportation budget that puts aside $16 million for specific infrastructure projects. So, I mean, we'll be able to use that to fix up, you know, our launch complexes, provide some specific support for new infrastructure for some of these commercial companies that we are enticing into the state.
You know, one of the concerns during session this week is, or this year, as we've talked about on the air in the past, had to do with sort of, I guess the way to say it is, Space Florida's control over a certain amount of incentives or share of certain amount of incentives, that there was concern that maybe you wouldn't have the same numbers available to you or there were extra hoops you had to go through. Has there been any kind of resolution to that? Did that come out okay for us?
Yeah, I think it did. I mean, as I understand the way these bills are written, you know, it becomes our responsibility to to apply them. And obviously, we still go to a board of directors to get their approval. But the basically the vetting or the due diligence that takes place is something that Space Florida does. So I guess you can call it that we're the ones in control of those monies, and that's good news for us.
That's great, great. Well, I appreciate it. Anything else to report this week?
Well, a couple other bills that were agreed to, the Space Business Incentives Act. That's that one that's got that interesting thing where they can transfer net operating loss tax credits. And, you know, it's like trading your operating losses to another company, and then you get a tax benefit out of it. I don't understand exactly how it works, but apparently it's good news for space businesses. And the research and development tax credit looks like that's been agreed to as well. So a couple of things that are going to make it easier for companies to come in and make profits, like you mentioned before.
Right.
It makes the state more business friendly. So that's good news.
That is absolutely good news. Well, great, Pat. We're going to say goodbye to you at this point, and won't get into have a chance to check in with you next week. We'll explain that in a little bit. But thanks for the update this week. Give everyone our best, and tell us once again if they're interested in doing business with Space Florida, how do we get a hold of you?
You want to touch base with us at spaceflorida.gov or at 321-730-5301 and ask for our business development office.
All right, good. Patrick, thanks very much. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, Jim, bye-bye.
All right, take care. There goes Patrick McCarthy, Director of Spaceport Operations at Space Florida. Of course, Space Florida, our sponsor here at Space Talk. Well, okay, we're here again with Roger Guilmette, Duane Day. Duane, we're talking about what it might take in the future to get folks interested in the space program and what it would need to really invigorate what's going on. Let me ask you, kind of related to that, are there any answers, and both of you guys are experts in military space, any answer in the military world? I see the X-37 flying on its second flight now. Is there something, I don't know if I want to say secret going on out there, but is there a solution to us on the military side that may present itself maybe even before the commercial folks are ready?
I don't think so. I can tell you that among the people who look at the military space program from the outside, we find X-37 to be a really confusing program, because if all they're doing is developing technology, they're spending a lot of money to do it.
Mm.
And so the question is, why would they be doing that? And we haven't really come up with a good answer. I got to say that I'm glad that somebody's doing something like this. It's good that even though shuttle is going away, that there are still people who are interested in investigating reusable vehicles, winged vehicles, and that they're actually, you know, not only doing studies, they're flying stuff. And so I'm really happy for that. But that one's a real confusing question mark for a lot of people.
Roger, what's next in space? What should we be doing? Do you want to go back to the moon, on to Mars? Do you think asteroids is the answer? Do we need an asteroid aimed at downtown Manhattan, or do we need an alien, like Duane says, beaming into Wyoming someday?
An asteroid aimed at downtown Manhattan would obviously reinvigorate the public's interest in space, but I think it would be taking you back to the Sputnik days of the nth degree. Like, why are we sitting? Why did we sit on our hands when we had the ability to develop a better sky scanning capabilities, more telescopes, and at least a fundamental or rudimentary intercept vehicle, which with the technology at hand could probably be done, and it should be a collaborative effort. It shouldn't just be the United States and Russia and China and the European Space Agency picking up the tab for it. But unfortunately, I think if you ever want to see another robust space program, you need a goal. I mean, I think a friend of mine used to tell me in the horse racing business that if you ever want to be successful, you need to have a starting date and you need to have an ending date, mm-hmm. because you need to have people building up anticipation until it opens, and then you need to have some rush to get to there before it closes. And not having an active goal to go toward, I don't see how people are going to buy into to a larger expenditure in new technologies.
I think that sounds just right about to me. We're going to start wrapping up here. Let me just give you a couple of things here about next week on Space Talk. I hope most of you are going to be out at the Visitor Complex attending the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. I'm going to be in West Palm Beach attending the commencement ceremony for my oldest son, Christopher, who is graduating from Palm Beach Atlantic University with a Bachelor of Arts degree in popular music. Christopher is a master playing guitar, has formed a band called Springer Mountain, which he tells me isn't necessarily bluegrass, but is more maybe categorized as something like old-time Americana. I'm not sure I know what that means. All I know is it sounds good, and they're getting a lot of interest in South Florida. So anyway, as a result of that ceremony, we're going to have to do a pre-recorded show for you to enjoy next week. I haven't got all the plans nailed quite yet, but check in with WMMB, keyword Space Talk, for all of our plans. Thanks to Dwayne Day and Roger Guilmette. Safe travels to you both. Thanks for being on the show this week. Space Talk, sponsored by Space Florida, and is a production of Mylas Solutions. Aaron Michaels, my personal chief engineer for Space Talk. Up next on WMMB is the Home Mortgage Law Show, so please stay tuned. I'm Jim Bankey. We'll talk to you again real soon.